With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and really happy now to be talking with Marblehead coach Jim Rudloff, Marblehead football coach Jim Rudloff. It's been so long. Coach, first of all, I apologize for not connecting with you in almost 2 years now, and so much has happened. But first of all, how are you doing? How are things going at Marblehead?
Real well, Rick. Thank you. And it's good to talk to you again, too, certainly. But all good. You know, we have... this year, the biggest news is really in Marblehead. We had a $25 million roof project that they did this past year, so the school was closed all summer. We had, you know, because it was a roof and things were coming off of the roof, that the entire perimeter around the building had to be secured. And so getting in to use the weight room, getting on the field, you know, for seven-on-sevens and things like that, you know, they were still able to allow us to do that. But, you know, everything was, you know, an adventure this year for us. things that, you know, we've been doing for years that are pretty simple and easy to do just became a little bit more of an adventure.
I want to ask you about that, Jim, because you've been doing this at one level or another with high school football for, you know, 25 years or more. And in terms of being a head coach, now that kind of thing that you just mentioned, you get into a routine, you've done it for a while, all during the off season. I'm sure that you review things and talk with other people about stuff, and you have a rhythm. So how does that rhythm change from year to year, if at all?
Great question, because probably for the 20 or maybe 21 of my first couple of years, the rhythm, it was just exactly the same every year. I don't honestly remember anything really changing all that much. There were, you know, maybe 1 or 2 days early you'd go back to school, or, you know, around Labor Day, nothing like what we do now. You know, where we were, the teachers were in school this week. Mm-hmm. The students start school next week. I don't ever remember a year that the students were in school for 5 days before Labor Day. I don't ever remember a year that, you know, the practice schedule is set up the way it is this year by the MIA. You know, it's just the last couple of years people have been tinkering with things because they know better than we do, and the tinkering is really what you're dealing with now every year. Is every year we come up with a new way, we reinvent a new way to do things better. That's really, I think, the challenge for the coaches is first getting that communicated to them, what it is they can do, and then trying to find a way to implement it, because almost every one of us has half of our staff at least to have full-time jobs somewhere other than the school. And not everyone can make it to every single practice, so that the times you're given, with the increase of emphasis of making sure that girls' sports get equal time on the fields and things like that, which I'm all for, means now less field time at the high schools. You know, we before everyone had a grass practice field or something like that. The turf has changed a lot of things because for example, field hockey referees they can only get one referee and they'll stay for both games. So if the girls have a field hockey game, it's going to be a varsity and a JV game. So really on an afternoon like that, it's almost impossible for any other boys soccer, girls soccer, or football to get onto the turf field. So you're on a grass field. So, you know, sometimes we go half of our practices on a grass field. You come up top to get the turf once the soccer game's over, something like that. So, you know, you're always making adjustments and things like that. But this year was very different with the, I think, the number of fingers that were in the pie.
You are so diplomatic, Coach. I love it. Let me ask you about the kinds of things that you are doing with your kids. You know, from year to year, and certainly you have built a tremendous legacy at Marblehead, and I'm sure that the kids, little kids, look up to your program and they follow it, and then they kind of get into it, into a rhythm at junior high school and then over at the high school. But in terms of from season to season, Jim, you know, I don't even know how to phrase this question. There are some years as a teacher I couldn't wait for the year to end because of the way the classes were, the chemistry of the classes. There are other years when I wanted the year to never end because of the chemistry. Do you go through something similar to that in terms of football, you know, year over year? I'm saying like from sixth grade on up through the high school.
Yeah, it's funny because you don't have as much control of it as you know, because the classes you get are the classes you get, and that's both as a teacher and as a coach. As a teacher, you can look at who's in the junior high school and see who's coming up. As a football coach, you can look at who's on the eighth grade football team. But how many of those kids are going to the prep? How many of them are going to the tech? How many of them are going to go to a private school? You don't have a lot of control over. So really it's you take what you can get. We've been very fortunate. I think anyone would tell you that year in and year out, Marblehead has about 25 to 30 kids on a freshman team. We play usually more freshman games every year than we do varsity games, just because there's so many high schools that call us and say, you know, can you do a game? Can you do a game? And so freshman football has been kind of the backbone of what we've done. This year we have four freshmen in the program. Mm. Next year, our eighth grade team, I believe, only has about eighth graders on it. So, and that goes along with a tremendous dip in enrollment in the, in both of those classes too, both across the boarding classes. So that's going to be, for us more than anything else, that's going to be a massive challenge.
Wow.
We've never dealt with that before. So this is the first year that the freshmen are with us. We don't have a freshman program. Hopefully we will next year. But so every year is so different, you know, and I think for everyone, you know, there's going to be years, you know, someone like Mark Betancourt, one year I know that, you know, we were speaking about it, you know, he had a bunch of kids either leave or come in from one of the other schools, the local schools in his area, and it just, you know, you just don't know. You know,
right.
you have no idea.
Well, you know how it was when you first started with Gloucester. I mean, they had 10 zillion kids on the team, and they were a powerhouse. And now the enrollment at Gloucester is so small. And that's, you know, there's so many distractions, and I've heard this so much with you know, what you just said with the lack of, I don't want to say lack of involvement, but the way the numbers are down. And, you know, as a coach, I just wonder, I don't know how much it affects you in the off season, but aside from fundamentals, and you're constantly, I would guess, even with your most seasoned player, you probably still, you must still teach fundamentals. But there's so much more to it. And I'm thinking like nutrition, social media, team commitment, and all that other stuff. I mean, it's a big ball of wax that you carry throughout the whole year before you get to this point in the preseason, don't you?
Yeah. There's so much more that, and it's really not, you know, we have to be careful how we say it, because it's so much more for the coaches to deal with, but that's only because it's so much more for the kids to deal with.
Oh,
what we're
point.
Doing is we're dealing with these little critters that are being pulled in so many different ways. So, you know, consider things like, If this student is a good basketball player, then he has an AAU coach up his yin yang telling him that he shouldn't be playing anything other than basketball. If he's a good baseball player, they have these things that these magical adventures called. Oh, I wish I could remember the name, but it's something that they. It's I've got to go down to Maryland, and I've got to go down to Fort Lauderdale, and oh, it's a showcase, and they do a showcase,
mm-hmm.
and they have to do this. They're being told that they have to do it, and then for lacrosse. You know, I feel bad for anyone who's a lacrosse coach, because the minute a student gets to be a certain level of a lacrosse player, they are being told, and the information is out there. It's that what are you doing at a public school?
Oh my goodness.
You need to get your butt into a private school as fast as you can.
Jim,
so that your little mullet can go off to greatness. But the thing is you see the kids going from public schools to play college lacrosse. But it's something out there on their phones telling them that they've got to have that photo with their arms crossed saying that they're committed and that they're blessed and all of these other things. And it's not realistic.
How do you deal with that? What's your advice with parents? Because, in fact, I was talking to a parent today, and it's not the same thing, but the kid has a choice to play football or to continue work. And I don't know the financial situation or whatever, but to me, obviously they're both important. But playing a sport as a freshman, sophomore, whatever, even if you're not a great athlete, you make so many connections that you're going to have for the rest of your life. You learn other life skills. But what's your advice to parents on that, Jim, what you just said? Because that's everywhere, what you know, all this pressure on focusing on one sport.
Yeah, it's a little different because if it's a work-related thing where the student has to work, it's, you know, we at least we try to say that, you know, family comes first. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, there's so many other things that are more important than playing on a football team. And obviously, if a kid had to work, that's almost a taboo, untouchable subject.
Right.
But I would certainly sit down with them and try to see if we could work something out. You know, make some allowances around when they have to be there or if they could miss a practice or a thing or two. But then you have to factor in the safety things around, well, how many times are you going to hit this week before the game? Are you going to know exactly who to block so that you don't get someone else killed? So it does become more difficult. I think the bigger thing is within a school itself is how a school can control kids becoming just these one sport athletes or thinking that they need to transfer to a greater, you know, school or greater program to get noticed. Is within the school, you know, what is every team, what are the teams themselves doing to retain the kids with youth programs and things like that? But even within the school, if to play football, you need to lift for an hour every day and you need to do an hour long meeting and then you need to do a 2-hour practice. But to play lacrosse, you only need to show up for practice and you get to play varsity games against the same opponent you're playing in football. What do you think a kid's going to play by the time he's a junior?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is a kid going to choose football or is he going to say, you know what, I'm just going to do lacrosse because we get to, and I don't mean to, I'm not disparaging lacrosse at all. I'm just saying that we have to think about these things. So are we asking the kids in all of the sports, are you using the weight room? You know, so to play this sport, you need to do this much work to do it. Or are we going to isolate one sport and make it look like that one is so much harder than all of the other ones that you probably don't want to play that? You know, are we having on these conversations about injuries? How many injuries do kids get in soccer, lacrosse, baseball, basketball? Why is the focus always on the kids getting injured in football so that a parent can say, I would rather not have them play that. It's dangerous. Well, I see the trainer's room and I see all the different kids from all the different sports in there. So it's, you know, and football is dangerous. I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, whitewash it, but there's a lot of things that the schools have to do to make sure that participation is well-rounded too. So we do it to ourselves sometimes, you know, we can wreck a program. The coaches can, you know, I think the school has a lot of responsibility in how we want to make sure that we evenly distribute the practice fields, the game fields, things like that, so that you don't want to get the impression or give the impression that one sport is being favored over the other. I've been fortunate, Marblehead, Marblehead's like that, but there's a lot that now we have to think about that we never had to think about before.
All right, I want to get to some to your coaches and focus on football preseason here. But first, Coach, I want to ask you, I talk to coaches and I ask them about I usually use the word rules, but I talked with Coach St. Pierre over at the prep one time, and he said, well, the coaches don't preach rules. We preach expectations. And at Marblehead, with the legacy that you've established over these many years, how do you approach that with your kids in terms of expectations? Because I know Paul Ingram used to have I don't know whether it was a written document or whatever, but he would make sure that the kids would commit to team so that they wouldn't go out and smoke cigars at graduation and stuff like that before the playoffs. So what do you do with your kids, Coach?
You know, it's funny because we started out years ago. We still have it laying around somewhere. A set of rules that the kids would sign at the beginning of the season. And these were all things, just the basic team rules that said, you know, 3 strikes and you're out. If you do this, you know, this will happen and do it. And that was more to cover everything so that the parents and the kids understood what was expected. Mm-hmm. That became a 2-page document, then a 3-page document, then a 4-page. And so really because of social media. And now when it comes to things like just in terms of rules, it's pretty basic. It's don't do anything that would embarrass you, the school, or the town.
Mm-hmm.
And we always just put it to the kids, would you do it in front of your grandmother? You know, like, is that something you would say? Is that something you would post or send to your grandmother? Is that something that you would do? And so getting it across that way now, and you do have to talk about social media because of the fact that some of these kids want to get recruited, and they don't understand that everything that they've ever posted is being recruited too.
Yeah.
Everything that they put up is being recruited. And then the final piece of the social media is just, you know, why are we giving bulletin board material to other teams? So just having some rules around, you know, what you want them doing with that. But everything else with our high school sports is the same rules as the classroom. We don't want to have the kids have their phones with them, you know, in a meeting or anything like that. So I don't think we need the book of rules anymore as much as preaching common sense, but giving them examples of what common sense is.
Do you rely on your student leadership for that?
Yes, a little bit, but we have to remember that the student leadership are also kids too. So it's that, you know, they're usually, if they're captains, they're pretty decent players, and they may be recruiting too. So, but if to be elected a captain, usually that's one of the kids that was listening all 4 years that they were in the program,
mm-hmm.
and never did anything like that. But certainly once the season begins, once the captains have been selected, you're asking them to do most of the policing, because you risk getting to week 8 and having the kids stop listening to you if you're the only voice.
Wow. Wow, that is way beyond my experience. Good Lord. All right, Coach, I want to get to a couple of other questions. First of all, your coaching staff. I know that there's one person who has left your coaching staff and gone over to Manchester.
Yeah, Nick Broughton left us to go to Manchester Essex, and I could never in my lifetime say enough good things about what Nick was. He was more than my right-hand man. You know, he was kind of my partner. I always looked at Nick as being the person that would follow me as the head coach of Marblehead, whenever the hell that's going to be. Oh, pardon me. You know, I think Nick's ready. I think Nick is ready for the opportunity. He's going to be a fantastic head coach. Those kids are very, very lucky to have them. I know our kids were brokenhearted when he left. You know, he taught at Marblehead. You know, he went to Marblehead. He played for me. So, I'm just so excited for him. But, I'll miss him dearly.
I love it. And, okay, Coach, run through the rest of your staff for me, please.
So Mike Giardi's still with us with our quarterbacks and on offense. My son Declan Rudloff is our wide receivers and defensive backs coach. Along with him, we just hired another coach from the same class, one of our former tight ends. AJ Russo is going to be helping Decky with the receivers and the defensive backs. Steve Lewis, our longtime linebacker and special teams running backs coach, is back again. Two former players, Aiden and Liam Gillis, are our defensive line coaches. Garrett Christopher is our assistant offensive line coach and slowly becoming my new right-hand man. Garrett's just a great kid that played for me, played in the 2019 season, graduated in 2020 in the non-graduation. But Garrett's just one of those workhorses that we have on our staff that we're really fortunate to have. Jim Phillips, who, because we don't have a freshman program, came up to coach with us. And then I needed to replace my offensive line coach, which is probably the hardest position to replace in high school sports. So I was very fortunate to get a Marblehead resident that played at St. John's Prep. He just left the Kent School as their head coach, and he's been with, in the past 10 years, the Bengals, the Miami Dolphins, Texas A&M, and Princeton.
Oh, my goodness.
So we were very fortunate to get him. His name is Ben Martin. And Ben's a Marblehead resident, and he came back to town. I, on a whim, gave him a call, asked if he would be interested in helping the high school team out, and so he agreed to do it, and We're really lucky to have really good guys and a great, you know, what I consider to have a great staff.
Oh man, the enthusiasm that you guys exhibit, it's crazy. I love it after all these years, and you still got the fire in the belly. That is so cool. Final question, Coach. By the way, I'm going to bug you during the season, and I know that you're going to be busy, and we're going to miss connections, but I'm still going to do it. Let me ask you: are there a couple of kids coming back that you would want to mention at this point?
Yeah, the first two off the top of my head are two of our captains, Timmy Wales, who's going to be a tight end receiver for us. We like to move him around a little bit. On offense, and then on defense, he's an outside linebacker. Owen Coyne, who's our free safety and a wide receiver. Timmy, by the way, is committed to Union. He's going to go and play with his brother, Colt, who's up there as an outside linebacker. Owen Coyne committed to Williams, wow, to play football. And then Peter Rhodes is our third captain. He is third-year returning center and defensive tackle. We expect a lot from those guys, but along with Pete, he has help on the line. We have an all-senior line of all returning guys, so we're expecting a lot out of our offensive line, too, as well. But, you know, most other than that, we're pretty young. You know, we have three guys fighting it out right now for the quarterback position. Two of them are juniors, one's a sophomore. You know, and we have a lot of, you know, juniors and sophomores in there. We have a gigantic sophomore class. And as I said, you know, three or four freshmen. And so it's a weird mix of players this year for us with a lot of inexperience at some key positions. But to know that you have a returning line, mm-hmm, certainly helps out a lot.
Wow, it sounds exciting, Coach. I'm not going to ask you about the changes in the MIAA. That's for next year. But who's your first opponent, and when is that?
First opponent this year is Lynn English, and because of the holidays, we're going to be playing them on Thursday night, mm-hmm, at Marblehead. So that will be our first game. Then the following week, we have a couple of different opponents this year. We're playing Medway in week two, and then Scituate in week three.
Where is Medway? Where is that?
Medway, I believe, is near Franklin. It's down in, it's, I think, kind of bordering Norfolk and Middlesex County.
Okay. Coach, I can't thank you enough for taking all this time and talking with me. And as I said, I'm going to bug you, but I wish you and the kids the best of luck this year.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it, and you're more than welcome to bug me.
All right. Thanks. Take care, Coach. Bye-bye.
All right. We'll see you. Bye now.
Yep. That is Marblehead High School football coach Jim Rudloff with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.